Welcome back to the Global Greek Influence Podcast. I'm Panagiota Pimenidou. To be up to date with the news from the Global Greek Influence Podcast and suggest your topics, subscribe, like, and review the Global Greek Influence Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Anchor FM, Amazon Music, and four more podcasting platforms. You can contact the Global Greek Influence through the podcast, Facebook, and Twitter accounts, the podcast website, globalgreekinfluence.com, and LinkedIn page. Science communication to different audiences has different messages, but the common denominator in all science communication should be science's rounded and factual communication. The true scientific message might be lost when using different cultural tones or languages, but we are also lost in translation in our mother languages. When speaking about science to a specific industry sector or specific industry sectors, mainly jargon is used, and science is seen not for what it is, but what they want it to be or become. Overall, when we talk about poor science communication or science communication that missed the mark, we could picture it as the battlefield of science versus different interests and interpretations or oversimplification. Albert Einstein said you should make things as simple as possible, but not simpler. We have all experienced misinformation and polarization through various communication outlets regarding COVID-19, whose pandemic is not yet over. For instance, poor science communication or science communication that missed the mark has been through the oversimplified solar power is too expensive to be of much use, wind power is too unreliable, nuclear power is cheaper than other low-carbon sources of electricity, biofuels are always destructive to the environment. Unfortunately, many see that they have to omit the conditions and parameters of research to make today's headlines and/or to have an impact based on media article reads. Otherwise, the scientific outcomes become too specific, restrictive, and not broadly applicable, or are or not the unique answer to a big problem. When it comes to energy, the truth is we never had fossil fuels perfect in terms of efficiency systems, powering homes, the industry, or transportation. The same applies to renewable energy systems to a greater or lesser extent. We just got used to that type of energy because it became accessible to most of us and to what we had for the past century and with the greater economy built around them. Again, I wouldn't dare to oversimplify. Still, we should keep in mind that, especially in energy, instead of seeing competition, we should seek complementarity based on different geographical economies, specificities, needs, resources, and climate conditions. For instance, 2 or 3 years ago, Europe focused on electrification as the mainstream alternative to fossil fuels powering transportation. But few questioned or considered where electricity would come from. Of course, from fossil fuels. When one would question the additional carbon dioxide produced for that extra electricity production to power transportation through batteries, they would receive the answer that we would still avoid additional carbon dioxide emissions from the cars if we used another alternative power source. Of course, the public was never presented with any justification for the carbon dioxide emissions electricity produced from fossil fuels and the carbon dioxide savings from battery cars, or the carbon dioxide emissions hydrogen produced from fossil fuels and the carbon dioxide savings from fuel cell cars, or the environmental impact of sourcing outside Europe batteries materials to store electricity, the battery's lifetime analysis and disposal. Would this be considered bad science communication or classified as partial information? Good science communication is about conveying a message to different audiences and presenting a balanced message supported, indicated, and proven by scientific evidence. We also see a bigger question or issue. Is the public being open to good science communication? The key words are open and openness. The public are individuals with different experiences and backgrounds, and they are more willing to accept what is relatable to them. One could see that even among experts in other sectors or businesses. If we consider the characteristics of different or of any audiences, then science communication, good or bad, is subject to interpretations by individuals. Interpretations are based on what we know and accept beforehand as truth. Our interpretations and openness are affected by our learning experience, how we learn and what we make out of an experience. How we learn is our indicator of how open we are, and what we make out of an experience is our interpretation mechanism. So some of the public is open to good science communication, some are not. And nowadays, this can be proven and supported by the readability of good scientific communication. But I'm under the impression that people who access and are open to good science communication are less vocal on social media. Could we train the public to identify good science communication? Could the institutions help improve science communication? We should start exploring these questions within the broader context of science communication. We know well that, as researchers, they do not teach us how to communicate to a broader or diverse audience. Should we be given the opportunities to be trained or exposed to various communication environments, or given the liberty to develop our direction in communicating science well with custom-made support? Do we have meaningful reasons to communicate our findings as researchers beyond expert audiences, beyond conferences, scientific journals, articles? How do we evaluate our experience of communicating specific expert knowledge to other expert audiences or have feedback from, for example, social scientists with whom we might have the opportunity to work together on a multidisciplinary project? These are some ideas, but not limited to them. Twitter is the ultimate playground and arena of global ideas and opinions. Objectively, it is challenging to communicate meaningfully, effectively, and truthfully within 280 characters fitting in a tweet. To create an impression or impact on Twitter, we have to make a loud statement. A good science communication is not about that, but being balanced and communicating carefully. Of course, we can start with a loud statement and then break it down into some follow-up tweets where we explain and deliver a balanced scientific message. But will this gain us many followers? Then, moving away from self-confidence boost one might get from crowd-pleasing on Twitter, there is no professional recognition coming from Twitter. We primarily see that successful professionals gain a lot of attention for their tweets, not vice versa. We do not typically see those who gain Twitter's attention becoming successful professionals unless a grand communication strategy goes hand in hand with an overall professional strategic vision. Communicating science should be about adding value. And going back to social media, I see that mainly good science communication goes out of the window as social media have become less about informing and more about entertaining and letting some steam off. Based on personal experience and without the need to promote one social medium over another, LinkedIn is the best medium to showcase good science communication and be recognized for that. Until now, LinkedIn has remained more professional. Yet, over the past 1.5 years, I have seen signs of Twitterism on LinkedIn, maybe because of the overall pandemic atmosphere and everything that has come out of it, including sensationalism. Undoubtedly, as scientists, engineers, researchers, and professionals, we are responsible for presenting our factual outcomes and effectively communicating scientific evidence relevant to the best understanding of scientific information to the public. If the mistrust towards scientists is at an all-time high, I would say that did not happen overnight or during the past almost 3 years. I would split this mistrust into three categories. The fact that non-scientific journalists or non-science journalists have primarily performed scientific communication, politicians, and in general, public figures. Let's take the case of reading a chart where data over a time period are presented, but correlating different data, which is entirely accidental with no scientific explanation, can lead to overgeneralization, while intricate results correlation can lead to false deductions. The second category is the lack of exposing the public to hard scientific data and scientific communication for their best critical analysis of information found anywhere. And the third category is the less active involvement of scientists in dynamically informing non-expert audiences, including in politics, the industry, and various sectors of the economy and economic activities life. Especially in the past 3 years, scientists have been put in this awkward position to apologize for non-expert spread of misinformation, including that scientists are corrupt because their facts do not align with what has been widely disseminated, either anonymously through social media or selectively by well-established show hosts who invited a single guest to promote a specific direction agenda rather than inviting a panel of experts to allow their audience to draw their conclusions. So the answer to fixing the all-time low in trust in science is scientists must engage more actively in communication and be trained in effective communication. Education to train citizens in critical thinking. Politics, other industries, and various sectors of the economy and economic activities to embrace scientific communication directly from scientists. Scientists have to prepare themselves for specific audiences, but also to identify themselves what the purpose of this communication is to a particular audience. Why do they want to communicate and what before exploring how to communicate? For instance, if we had to share our findings with external stakeholders, let's say investors to a business, we would look to gain support. Similarly, communicating with the public or communicating to the public is not only about gaining support, but also about educating, standing up for, promoting knowledge, and fostering and strengthening trust. In the case of government, public organizations, or within the industry, additionally to the previous, communicating can become the medium to collaborate by stimulating new or the revision of policies or research to promote change. To perform any of these more effectively, we should always see the specifics of our audience and the purpose the audience would want to be informed of specific scientific findings. For example, in the case of the general public requesting more information about our research and how it affects them, it is up to us to choose a presentation and or an open dialogue in the form of a conversation we would have, for example, with our close ones, with our parents, with our relatives, with our family. Similarly, when we are asked to convey our expertise through social or traditional media, the main reason might be again the audience to know more about our science. about our research. The media might want to know what makes the findings of our study important, their significance, and how our findings complement or diverge from other outcomes in the same or different fields. We might have more difficulty when it comes to communicating research or science to the industries, as they are primarily interested in profits. In this case, we should work closely with experts in the specific industrial and financial field to ensure our science is not misinterpreted in terms of missing the point, over or underestimated to deliver financial gains. Whether we work in academia or industrial research and development, colleagues and collaborators should focus on information that supports the prospect of working together. Also, we have an excellent opportunity to showcase research achievements and vision to promote leadership roles within an industry. The order of presenting our scientific communication should be the opposite of the way we structure it when presenting science to an expert audience, verbally or in writing. Instead of starting from the specific results, we can start from the conclusions of our scientific facts and main findings, then to work backwards to how we have achieved them, starting, for instance, by concentrating on the two or top five results or solutions. We have to balance between memorable key messages and avoiding oversimplification. Becoming relatable by using the language of the specific audience means we have to study that audience beforehand and confirm our understanding by having informal conversations with them or with social scientists colleagues. Most importantly, instead of presenting to having a conversation, a dialogue, some academics might have engaged with more interactive teaching and learning methods. Researchers should be reminded of the purpose of the specific communication by promoting their audience's participation through not only Q&As, but even by commenting on social media posts. Therefore, speaking out on relevant misinformation or partially presented information while promoting the audience's familiarization with and understanding of scientific knowledge, also to assist the audience to see the scientific contribution in a bigger problem, providing a particular solution that affects and impacts the audience. Thank you all for staying until the end. Stay tuned for another podcast episode next Sunday on decision making with experts' views, and get notified by subscribing and following on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and 5 more podcasting platforms. Your feedback and suggestions also help us become better. Until next time.